Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Yeah, I really appreciate you doing this.
Please, thanks for having me.
Maybe to kick it off, we can go through a little bit of your personal journey and some of the significant challenges that you've had to face along the way. That'd mm-hmm. be awesome. Where did it begin for you?
Well, so I lost my father when I was 10 years old, but the story that I was given when he passed away was that he had died of a heart attack. And my 10-year-old mind was not in a position to ever question that. My father was a very healthy man. He was an outdoorsman. He was a very, very avid mountain climber, hiker. He raced cars as a hobby. So he was a really vibrant man. And he was also a smoker. And back in the 70s, that was something so many people did. You didn't think twice about it. But when I learned that he had a heart attack, and you kind of connect those dots and think, okay, well, it had to be something to do with smoking. It was, I guess, an easy thing to reconcile with. Not that the loss itself was an easy thing, of course, but just that explanation was an easy explanation. It wasn't until I was 45 years old and married and had a family of my own that I learned very much accidentally that he had in fact taken his own life. So that was about 10 years ago. So I'm in my mid 50s now. So I've had the truth for the last 10 years. And it's been during that time that I've done, you know, an awful lot of work trying to understand kind of the mindset that he might've been in to make that decision, what puts other people in that frame of mind. And then how do we avoid someone getting to that point? That was kind of where it took me. I really got to a place where I felt like I needed to be a part of the solution. And so I started coming out with my story and really opening up and talking to people about it. I didn't share that truth for a very long time. It was years before I actually started talking publicly about my own father's suicide. And once I started, I couldn't stop. I felt like it was resonating with way too many people. And it was creating a safe space for enough people to say, wow, I had the same kind of a situation, or I know someone who's struggling. And there was such an interesting domino effect that I just felt like I couldn't stop. And so talking about it became writing about it, became podcasting about it, and ultimately became, you know, working as a crisis counselor and a storyteller.
So was that initially concealed from you in a way for your own protection? Was that the intention, or was it the stigmas around it?
You know, you would think back in the 1970s, so he passed away in 1978 at a time when mental illness was not discussed, where it was so heavily stigmatized. So that was the reality of the time the time frame that we're talking about, but it wasn't really the driving factor behind my mom's decision to keep that from me. That was really just rooted in not wanting to make the pain that I was already feeling worse. You know, my mom has been just such an incredible support system to me. It is to this day. And at that time, you know, my dad was my best friend. My dad was my buddy. He was everything to me. And when he was gone, there was just such an incredible void that my mother knew there was no way to fill that void. She also knew there was no easy way to explain his death, but she felt like in that moment, it would be easier for my little 10-year-old mind to reconcile a heart attack versus his decision to leave. And so that's where that decision came from. And she really committed to it for the next 3.5 decades. We didn't know the truth.
There's a lot of silent battles going on out there, isn't there? And that's the thing about mental health, is it's invisible. I can relate in so many ways. I've had my own struggles with it. I've also experienced loss. But for you to have that new information come through and then so rapidly begin to talk about it is really, really impressive, because it's very complex grief you must have gone through there, having found it out. Well, I mean, you were still going through the grief, right? But the actual change in circumstances for you to then start to really talk about that so quickly is all credit to you for that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It, you know, I'm still going through it. I'll always be going through it. You know, once you meet grief in the way that I have, or maybe in the way that you have, you're always accompanied by that grief in one way or another. It doesn't go away. It doesn't stop. It just kind of ebbs and flows, and it morphs into different things. And for me, talking about it and sharing it is my own way of reconciling with it in as much as I can. I mean, for, you know, in my case, and in the case of so many suicide survivors, there's that why. I mean, there are people who know what the why is, and then maybe it was explained to them, maybe it was shared with them, maybe it was written in a note, or maybe it was so obvious. And in my case, it wasn't. In my case, there are questions that just can't be answered. And that's something that you have to learn to live with. And I'm not sure there's ever really a way to reconcile with that, because I'm very much kind of a linear personality type, and I like to kind of know where I stand. I like to know the answers to the questions. And this is kind of the ultimate question that I don't have the answer to, and I never will. But the more I talk to people about it who have been through similar situations, the more I share my story and hear other people's stories, there's just a comfort there. There's so much comfort I found in community and other people who understand. Such a unique kind of grief. And that why piece of it is such a big part of that. But it's a different kind of pain if you've experienced it. I mean, obviously losing someone is a tragic thing. However it happens, this is just kind of a different level of grief that is kind of inexplicable unless you've gone through it.
Yeah, I had a drum teacher, and he was my hero. And I only knew of him in the practice room and the very intimate drum sessions that we had. And I was 18, and I just very much, you know, he was a superhero to me.
Yeah.
And he was a very vibrant guy, and he was loved by many and respected by all the musicians in Melbourne, where I'm from. And he was just a absolute phenomenal talent. But he was so supportive and nurturing and encouraging as a teacher. And then just one day I got the call not to come into class. And he'd taken his own life. And as you're saying, it was just so out of left field to me, because I had no idea. And of course I only knew him in that teacher-student space. And I ended up making a little doco about as a tribute to him. And I was very careful with that because, you know, I had to speak to his family and make sure it was okay. And it was my first attempt at making a film as well. But I made this little film, and then just the handwritten letters and things I got from people close to him were so, so rewarding. And that's why I made that little film, you know, to just pay respects to him. So that's one of my experience, but you're right. Like exactly what you're saying, it was so hard to process. He was just, to me, he was invincible. And then the more I sort of learned about him, the more I realized he didn't let anybody know. Nobody was aware of his struggle. And, you know, if only he had reached out, you know, it's a common story there, I think.
It's the same story with my dad. No one had any idea. I mean, he was such a vibrant soul. He loved his family. He loved his community. He loved being outdoors in nature. He loved movement. He was just so charismatic in every way, and just a happy man. And you would never have had any idea. My mother had no idea. Friends had no idea. So I can absolutely relate to the shock factor.
So how can we, reading some of your bio and profile there, I agree with you on this term committed. It's like there's a certain, you know, committed is used when you like go to jail, or, you know, you're committed for something. Mm-hmm. And until I read your profile there, I hadn't thought of that, actually, that term. And I agree with you. I don't think that's necessarily, it's just not necessarily the way to call it a judgment on that.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about the word, I mean, it was nothing that I had ever really thought about before either. And then I don't remember where I heard it first, but I had heard someone coming out in defense of changing the language around how someone dies when they die by suicide. And when you say someone committed suicide, I mean, you said it yourself, it's like you're committing a crime. There's that. It's a very unique connotation that we attach to that word committed, like a sin or a crime, or you're doing something that's somehow wrong or punishable. And that's not the case. It's just not the case. And it's really unfair to the person who we lost, because it puts a different kind of stigma on top of an already existing stigma. It's just language that we shouldn't be using anymore, because language matters. And if we want to start normalizing conversations around mental illness and around suicide and just mental health in general, one of the ways that we do that is by choosing the words that we use really, really carefully. And it starts there. I mean, I get to the point now, I had to rewire my own brain to not say committed suicide, instead to say died by suicide or took their own life. And I remember it was hard. I had to make very intentional word choices in the beginning, and I couldn't always remember. And sometimes you get caught and you stumble. But once I did kind of embed that into my belief system and I changed that behavior, now when I do hear other people saying it, I actually have like a visceral reaction to it. I actually can feel kind of the sting of that word. And every time I do, it just makes me realize how important it is for us to change the way we talk about these things. It starts there.
And I think with depression, you know, it's complex, but it's like, you know, sometimes it's not a choice. It comes over you, that's not really a choice. Or if suicidal ideations come into play, it's not necessarily in the person's you know, the person doesn't necessarily choose that. It can, I know from my own experience with depression and so on, it can just come like a wave. Mm-hmm. So to kind of judge it as something that could be, you know, it's very complex because obviously there's so many nuanced aspects to it. But I think, you know, I am, I'm qualified to talk about this stuff, having experienced it firsthand. Mm-hmm. The stigma. So how do we go about the stigma, changing some of these stigmas?
We do exactly what you and I are doing right now. We just have the conversations, the hard conversations. And when we have them over and over and over again, and we, you know, we kind of widen the circle where we're having them little by little, like at that grassroots level. And then the way you'll go off and talk to someone the next time, and the way I'll go off and talk to someone the next time, like we just keep kind of widening that circle so that eventually these kinds of conversations become normal. And they become less hard because they become more normal. And we have to get vulnerable. That's the thing. You know, we've got this mentality, at least here in the United States, we have this mentality where everyone has to just soldier on. Everybody has to just power through and suck it up and deal with it. And that's so untrue. It's such a false and debilitating narrative, because now you've got all these people who are struggling on the inside, feeling like they have to just keep themselves together for the optics on the outside. And now you've got people who are one way in public and another way in private. And it serves no one if you're in pieces in half your life and you've got it together on the outside. That's just a veneer, and veneers crack really easily. And I think just being vulnerable, like when you're in a space of vulnerability, what do you have to lose? Absolutely nothing. You're being honest. You're being transparent. You're being genuine about what's going on the inside. No one's going to challenge that. No one's going to question that. No one's going to fault you for that. Because at the end of the day, like there isn't one of us out here who isn't dealing with something, whether it's a loss. Like we all deal with certain things that are universal. Doesn't matter who you are, doesn't matter where you are, doesn't matter your socioeconomic status, your race, your religion, your culture, nothing. It's life, it's death, it's pain, it's sadness, it's joy. Like we all come together in those places and we understand each other. And the more we talk about it, the less power the stigma has, until ultimately it doesn't have one at all.
Yeah, you're right. It's like a trickle mm-hmm. effect.
Yeah, exactly.
Widen it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Yeah, the vulnerability, I think it's very liberating when you come to that place where you can be very literal about what's going on, especially in workplaces and so on, because it's like we're humans, we're not robots. As you say, there's not a lot of consistency in the stuff that, you know, and to just operate on this holding it together level, you're right, that can just, you know, there's only so long you can do that. I've just found it quite liberating to say, hey, today I'm not, you know, and then I'll be cool. And it, you don't have to, you know, if you mention the depression word and you see the kind of the eyes start to, the perplexed looks, it's like, it's cool, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, it's like someone wouldn't fault you if you said, I'm not coming into work, I have a stomach bug, or I've got a fever, or I have an illness that I'm dealing with. We think of these tangible things like cancer or heart disease or a broken bone, or, you know, something that you can see that's measurable, it's quantifiable. And the problem with mental illness is that it's so abstract and it's so unique to each one of us that, you know, being depressed or being anxious or having ideations can look and feel so different for everybody. But it's because it's so subjective that people just can't connect with it in the same way that they would never expect you to come into work if you had just fallen and broken your leg or if you had had surgery. Nobody's going to look at you funny. But if you're saying that, you know, you need to take a mental health day because you're feeling low, then that raises eyebrows. And it's only when we stop tolerating that kind of reaction and we don't give that kind of reaction any real credence. We say what it is. And if someone has a hard time with it, well, that's their problem. That's they're the ones having the hard time with it. You have nothing to do but be honest about how you're feeling. That's your responsibility. That's my responsibility. And little by little, the rest of the world will catch up the more honest that we are with each other.
We don't need to fit it into a nice, neat little package for everybody to understand.
No, not at all. And that's, you know, that's just, it's just bullshit. And it's just too bad that too many people are still so petrified to step outside the lines. What we need to be doing, we need to be widening the lines to encompass everything, because mental illness is just, it's an illness. It just has a different word in front of it. That's all. It's the only difference.
Yeah, for sure. It's a tradition on the show to have guests offer some kind of challenge to listeners. So for anybody who might be struggling, does anything spring to mind, or particularly relative to, I mean, we've already covered a lot of things, you know, in terms of talking and, this knock-on effect. Is there anything? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the first thing that comes to mind, honestly, and this is probably due to the fact that I just, before you and I hopped on the phone, I just got off of a crisis lifeline shift. I would say I challenge anyone who knows that they're not okay to not only admit that they're not okay, but to take it one step further and call a lifeline, reach out to someone. If you're not comfortable calling a hotline, a crisis line, or a warm line, call a friend, call a family member, call a coworker, call someone else that you trust. But reach out and don't be caught up in that fear that I think incapacitates a lot of people, because they're worried about what happens when I call. What are people going to think? What are people going to do? Are police going to come to my door? Am I going to be taken away? People have real legitimate fears about what happens when you make that call for help. And I mean, sure, there are definitely circumstances in which we do, as crisis counselors, have to get intervention if someone is harming themselves or at imminent risk of harming themselves. That's a unique situation. But for the most part, what we want to do is get you to a safe place. We want to talk. We want to let you talk. We want to let people share what's on their mind and what's in their heart. And we hold that space, and we want to make sure that people are safe and supported. So I would just challenge anybody who's listening who might be struggling to reach out for help, because there is hope. There is hope when you know that there are people out there who are willing to listen and who are willing to give you the resources that you need.
Yeah, asking for help is massive. Mm. So important. What is the Trevor Project?
So the Trevor Project is the largest LGBTQ crisis support hotline in the US. We help teens, young people, young adults ages 13 to 24. That's our primary demographic. But we'll never turn anyone away based on their age or where they're calling from. But our primary group are young people ages 13 to 24 who are in crisis within the LGBTQ community. And we're offering them not only the old fashioned kind of, you know, you pick up the telephone and you call the hotline and you get someone on the other end like me. We also have a texting platform. If someone's feeling like they don't want to be connected to someone voice to voice, we have the ability to receive text messages and carry on conversations and support people via text as well.
Okay. Yeah. I'm familiar with the Australian system. In Australia, we have Beyond Blue. They're the crisis line. I'm not so familiar with America. So it's cool to hear some of the, what other support is available in the States?
We have the 988 crisis lifeline. It used to be a little over a year and a half ago. It was an 800 number that people here in the United States could call and get support. And what we did, there was a big collective movement within the mental health world to make that number more accessible. Like, I don't know if you have an emergency lifeline, like we have 911 here. If your house is on fire, if there's a burglary, if there's an accident, you call 911 and police or fire or rescue is sent. We wanted to create something here in the US that was similar to that, but for mental health. Mm-hmm. If you're in crisis in that way. So they shortened the 800 number and made it into a 988 crisis lifeline. So you pick that up, call that number, and someone picks up immediately, and you have the same kind of help available. And there's also a service, an online platform called Crisis Text Line that is purely a texting platform where people can get the same kind of help just via text. The National Alliance on Mental Illness, called NAMI here in the US, also has their own lifeline. So there are so many different organizations here in the US that are working collaboratively to help people who are in all types of crisis.
Do you think it's moving in the right direction?
Yeah, I do. Cool. I do. I mean, like anything, I wish it would be faster. Yeah. Because I want more people to be able to get help and to get resources. But I think that we're at a touch point right now in the world, not just in this country, but I think in the world. I mean, especially with what's happening in the world that's creating so much global stress. We're all feeling the weight of all the other conflicts that are happening around us in the world. And that's, you know, we're turning on our TVs and we're holding it in our phones and we're reading about it everywhere. And it adds a really complex layer to whatever we're already dealing with on a day-to-day basis in our work life, in our home life. And so I think that people are waking up to the fact that we need to be okay in here. Like, we need to be okay in our own heads and in our own hearts in order to, you know, to present to the world in a way that is beneficial and helpful. Like, we want to put our best selves out into the world, and we can't do that if we're constantly struggling, if we're in crisis, and we need to take care of ourselves. It's the old, you know, it's the old oxygen mask on the airplane philosophy.
For yourself.
You can't possibly help anybody around you if you're not okay yourself. So yeah. I think we're definitely moving in the right direction. And the more conversations that we have like this, the closer we get to where we don't need to depend on these things anymore.
I mean, I think therapy is, it's much more commonplace now. There is even still some stigma around it, but I think it takes great. I'm in Europe, particularly where, you know, there's a lot of old, like you said earlier, soldier on, particularly in males, the heavy European history, you know, it's just like, I think in Australia, it's a little bit more perhaps progressive in like the therapy sense in Europe. But I just think it takes courage to, like you said, it's mental health. It's like a broken, you know, why is it different to a broken leg that you would treat? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think the stigmas around that are shifting, but I just think it takes courage to be vulnerable and to face up to the stuff. As we said earlier, you've also written a few books.
Mm-hmm.
I'm interested in your writing process. Do you have a very clear writing process? How do you go about publishing?
You know, I've written in so many different spaces over the years. I've written for an awful lot of platforms, parenting platforms in particular, here in the US and around the world. And I've been moving steadily into that mental health space and working with those platforms. But so the process is pretty similar regardless of who I'm writing for. I mean, my own individual process. I mean, I work with a publisher who's based out on the West Coast in California, and they're amazing letting me really kind of take my ideas and run with them. You know, book writing has changed so much in the last, you know, I would say decade or two. It used to be that you would write your whole manuscript and kind of hand it over to a publisher, and they would either say, yes, we're accepting it, or no, we're not, or, you know, let's change a little bit here and there. In a lot of cases now, and in my case, it was a simple idea and a basic structure of what I wanted to write and who I wanted to write it for and why that they accepted, and then really kind of left me to write the book. So, you know, it was really truly a case of kind of working at it as, you know, as a team and progressing from a simple idea all the way through to the end. And that, I mean, for so many years, for over, well over probably a dozen years, I've been writing a column, and they're, you know, short 1,000 words, maybe 2,000 words at the most. And, you know, so they have a very specific arc that I follow. And again, it starts with just an idea, or maybe I think of the title first, or maybe I just, there's a point I'm trying to make, and I kind of formulate everything around a message or around a title or around an idea. I mean, I think it's probably an unorthodox kind of process, but somehow it's managed to work. And I've got a few books out there, and the one I'm working on now, I find it's about my father's story. I've been working about it for quite a long time. Probably written it 100 times in my head already, because I really want to be very, very intentional about how I put this story out into the world. But I've always just kind of followed a really organic process.
Nice one. Where can people find you in the books?
So you can really find me and everything that I do on my website. That's the best kind of catch-all for everything that I do. And I just recently redesigned it to be a space that's offering resources and support for not only kind of generalized mental health issues, but suicide prevention and awareness in particular, and grief and loss resources. So that's at lisasugarman.com. I have a really, really extensive list of mental health resources broken down by lots of different categories, probably 17 or 18 different categories, like LGBTQ and Latinx and the elderly and European resources, Canadian resources, BIPOC resources that are very specific to people in their individualized communities so that they can find help that they need. And I have a YouTube channel. I drop videos every week. It's just real quick videos that are kind of from the heart and mind of a survivor. And that all feeds into my website. Books are on there as well. So everything I do is pretty much there.
Very cool. It's awesome. You've got that very specific stuff broken down.
Yeah.
Specificity, is that the word?
Specificity, I think.
Sorry, yeah. Specificity.
So you don't just drop that in casual conversation, Daniel. It's a hard one.
It is specific. What is it?
Specificity.
Specificity.
Let's break it down. Specificity.
Specificity. Thank you for
there
that.
There it is. Sure. That's probably the first time I've ever said that word on a podcast.
Wow. Me too, actually. It is. Mm-hmm. It is.
We nailed it.
I'm glad we nailed that. But the thing is, like, bringing it home, these conversations, you know, they don't have to be uncomfortable. Like, it's so comfortable to speak with you, and it's just like, you know, the more of that, the better, like you say. So thank you for everything that you're doing. And I really appreciate your insights in what's been quite a short time.
Oh, you're so welcome. And I appreciate you right back just for, you know, bringing me on and, you know, letting me speak to your community. I mean, these conversations, like you said, they don't have to be hard. You know, if we're all being honest, we can all kind of bond over the fact that most of the stuff that maybe you're dealing with, I'm probably dealing with it too, or some version of it. And so is everybody else. And once I think we consciously realize that, that's when the conversations become easy.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.